It's on Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. If you're on social media, you have probably seen a lot of posts about the presidential election, what people think about the candidates, where they stand on the issues, what the outcome might mean for the country. But in any campaign season, there's a lot of misinformation flying around as well. And it turns out that if you point out those inaccuracies, it doesn't actually change the way that people feel or believe. Former Georgia State political science professor Jason Reifler has researched this very issue. It's a report called When Corrections Fail. He now teaches at the University of Exeter in the UK and joins us via Skype. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Also with me is Audrey Haynes. She's an associate professor at the University of Georgia's School of Public and International Affairs. It's good to have you as well, Audrey.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Jason, this is actually an issue that you have been studying for a number of years. What keeps you in this particular field?
Well, the simple answer is that we don't have a good answer of how to fix the problem. And so that's what keeps me and my co-author, Brendan Nyhan, focused on this and interested in it. And our basic finding is that people who hold a misperception, so something they believe about the world that is factually incorrect, when you give them information to try and correct that misperception, then among the people who hold the misperception most strongly, the giving them information that shows them that they're wrong has the potential to backfire and actually get them to believe a misperception even more strongly.
So it's being called the backfire effect. And before we dive really deeply into the psychology of why we don't want to believe the truth, let's talk a little bit about your study methods. You made up a bunch of fake newspaper articles, right? Like, for example, that they found WMDs in Iraq, which they did not. And you presented them to people.
Yeah, so the way that we did it is that we designed newspaper articles based off of real newspaper articles. And in one version, respondents were given the first study that we did was in 2005. We've done a number since this, but the basic structure remains the same. In one version of the newspaper article, people were just told about a campaign speech that Bush had made, if I remember correctly, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and it was a real speech he made that day. All of the quotes in the article were real quotes that George Bush had said. And then other people in our study got the same information plus one additional paragraph that said, on the same day that Bush gave his campaign speech, the CIA released a report saying that, in fact, there weren't weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And among the people who were the most conservative people, and therefore the people most likely to believe that WMD had been found, giving them the corrective information that there were no WMD in Iraq actually led them to say that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. They were more likely to say that than those who didn't get the extra paragraph.
Yeah. Okay. I want to boil this down for people for whom that was a lot of information.
It is a lot.
Right. So basically, people come into, and let me bring you into this, Audrey. So people are coming into something, they read an article, possibly about politics, and they already have an opinion. If you correct them, it strengthens the wrong belief instead of having them change their opinions. So how widespread do you think this is, Audrey?
Well, generally, it's pretty widespread because people develop ideas. They develop them pretty early. I teach a class on propaganda. We just finished writing a textbook. And one of the things that we learned and we talk about very often is stereotypes. That's one of the best examples to give of really ingrained opinions that we hold. And one of the most difficult things to change is a stereotype. Even if you give people information, even if they have some experiences that counter that stereotype, it tends to stick with them. And one of the reasons that this happens, there are multiple reasons. I mean, it's a big process. There are a couple things. I'll throw these out. Jason knows all about them. But, you know, once we develop an attitude, if it continues to strengthen, it becomes a belief. We tend to use something called affirmation bias or selective exposure is another way to think about it. We expose ourselves. We take in information that confirms what we believe because it makes us more certain. It makes that stronger. We may also get our information. They talk about this in terms of cultural cognition. You know, we belong to a tribe, say you're a Republican. You spend more time with that group. It gives you security. It gives you confidence to be in that group. So you're very resistant to challenges. In some ways, our thoughts and our beliefs put us into different tribes. And over the past few years, people have been playing on that. In fact, the best propaganda is not propaganda that gets you, that challenges what you think. It's what figures out what you believe already and uses it, reframes it, makes it stronger. And often those are stereotypes.
This is very odd. And I want to make sure people understand we're not talking about one end of the political spectrum or not. For example, they did a study in which they asked during Obama's administration, they asked people if the president can do anything about high gas prices. Two-thirds of Republicans said the president can do something. Two-thirds of Democrats said he couldn't. But 6 years earlier, they asked the same question of people, and that would have been while President Bush was in the office, a Republican. Three-quarters of the Democrats said President Bush could do something about high gas prices, and the majority of Republicans said that he couldn't. So this doesn't—it doesn't matter whether you're a liberal or a conservative or somewhere in between, Jason. So this is a human thing, or is this a modern thing?
This is a human thing, that people don't like to get information that runs contrary to their beliefs. And there's nothing, there's maybe some evidence that suggests that it might be a little bit more widespread on one side of the political spectrum than the other. But this is a sort of widespread human problem, and it matters because people care about politics. They think that elections matter and that there are consequences for the country or for the state. And so people have a lot at stake. When people don't have a lot at stake, people may not have particularly strong brand preferences for what kind of refrigerator they have or what dishwasher they have. And then they can be persuaded probably fairly easy on, you know, Consumer Reports type information about who makes the best home appliance. That's because we don't have terribly strong feelings about what brand is best in home appliances. But we do when it comes to our political parties. We grew up with an attachment probably to one political party or another. And when we're given information that runs counter to what we already believe, we think of all of the reasons why we believe what we believe. And we come up with justifications, so we counter-argue this information. And that whole process of reminding ourselves why we believe what we believe, why we think we're right, that's a big part of the underlying process that strengthens these misperceptions or beliefs that run contrary to the best available empirical evidence.
Go ahead, Audrey.
Well, Celeste, I was going to follow up on that just to add one other variable and factor, and that is our tribal leaders, the people who, with voting, think about, we think politics is important, but party organizations and elected leaders, they think it's important too. So they help this process by providing information, often information that is not always accurate. It's sort of like parents who are constantly reminding their kids about Santa Claus, so they behave, right?
Right.
So they know it's not true, but they know it's going to have an effect on how they act.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about why people won't or can't change their minds. And we would love to hear from all of you listening. Do you find that you change your mind on politics? And be honest here. Have you changed your mind within the past, say, 5 or 10 years on a political matter? And do you think it's possible to persuade other people as well? You can tweet us at OST Talk or go on Facebook. My guests are University of Georgia political science professor Audrey Haynes and Professor Jason Reifler of the University of Exeter, who started this while you were still teaching in Georgia at the Georgia State. So, Jason, does it matter how partisan you are? We do have really great research from Pew showing that we're more politically divided now than we have been since the Civil War. So does that affect how likely we are to remain entrenched in our beliefs?
I think it probably does in a couple of different ways. One, the people who are more partisan are probably people who care more about politics, who probably pay more attention to politics, who feel that they have a greater stake in the outcome of elections. So the sort of what they believe in politics is probably on average slightly more important to them than, say, people who are independent or less political. So when things are more important to people, obviously this sort of same processes of trying to defend their worldview is likely to be stronger. I think the second, and this really follows on the point that Audrey just made, which is that the people who are more partisan are also more attentive to what party leaders are saying. And party leaders are people who are sending very clear signals about how partisans should behave, what they should think, and what they should believe, and that these signals are really, really powerful, and they greatly, greatly affect what...
You got distracted by the phone.
I did get distracted by a phone. Yes.
Let me go to Audrey really briefly then, because I wonder, you know, the internet is a place where oftentimes when I'm looking on social media, people will post facts that are clearly wrong. As a journalist, I can point them to the actual research or the reporting that proves that's incorrect. So mm-hmm. you would think the internet would make this this phenomenon less intense, and yet it seems to have intensified. Why doesn't the internet actually make us more informed?
Well, because just as you're getting content that tells you that, you know, this information may be inaccurate, you're getting a lot of counter information too. And then go back to that selective exposure. You know, we can downplay information. We can decide, for example, I'll give you one on the Democratic side. For years and years and years, one of the things that the Clintons would say when information would come up about various scandals or certain things is that it was a right-wing conspiracy against them. So that's something that you can hold on and bring into your pre-existing belief that the Clintons are good people. They wouldn't do that. They have really good intentions about, you know, the policy to help people. So this is... You have a way to rationalize it, and that goes along with a concept called cognitive dissonance. So we really, our brains don't like having conflict within them. You know, if there's information that comes in and it is upsetting you, you will suffer some anxiety. So there are some things that you can do. You can, you know, if I use the example of if you find out that your significant other is cheating on you, well, you can make some changes. You can break up with them. Cognitive dissonance is gone. Conflict is over. Or you can reject the information. No, they would never do that. And then you go on. That's sort of like the delusional part.
Yeah.
People can delude themselves. Or you can accept the information and say, hey, you know what? It's my fault. You know, I'm not a good girlfriend. It's a one-time thing. I'll live with it. Oh, maybe that's sort of the new normal. That's okay. So, you know, generally there are like three things you can do. And we do this in politics too. You know, we can change our vote.
Right.
We can change our party. We can reject that information, or we can say it's okay. You know, Hillary had to do that because, you know, that's the only way she could get things done.
And that's how we relieve the anxiety in our
yeah.
heads. And Jason, Jason, one of the things that we have, that scientists, that researchers like you have found, is that even when there's scientific evidence proving something is wrong, respondents in some of these studies said, well, science doesn't really understand this, or they no longer trust the research. And that is horrifying to me as a journalist, if we're getting to the point where not even facts can change someone's opinion. What do we do about this?
So this is the really difficult question. How do we fix it? So first, just a couple of sort of more background points to follow up on another point that Audrey was making, is that when we look at when people have a disconnect between their party ID and policy positions, some work by Paul Gorin at the University of Minnesota shows that people are more likely to change their policy positions to be in line with their party than they are to switch parties to be more in line with their policy positions.
Interesting.
And then the same sort of thing happens when it comes to how we evaluate evidence. So Dan Kahane and some of his colleagues at Yale have done a really great study that shows that when you present people with information about gun control, they interpret it in a way that is consistent with how they feel about gun control. If you make it about smoking bans or less highly contentious issues, they are much more likely to evaluate the numerical data correctly. So it's not easy to come up with a simple solution. I think that overall there are a couple of simple ways to sort of limit the problem on the margins, and then sort of the bigger fixes are still part of what the ongoing research is about. And so one is just simply, when you come across something that's not true, and I think this is especially true for journalists and people who are politically active and post on social media, is try as much as possible not to repeat false claims. When people hear false claims, they're just, it makes it easier to believe. There's sort of a what's known as the fluency effect, whereas the more they hear things, the more that people think that it might be true, and they confuse familiarity with accuracy, and just not to spread it to people who are apt to believe it in the first place. And I think the second is, over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a really growing movement, both in the United States and internationally, for journalists to really actively assess the accuracy and truthfulness of what politicians are saying.
You're being kind. You're saying that journalists aren't telling us what the truth is. They're just reporting on the conflict, because we're starting to realize people don't trust facts anymore. It's a really interesting discussion that we could continue but can't. That is Professor Jason Reifler of the University of Exeter, and we also spoke with University of Georgia political science professor Audrey Haynes. So fascinating. Thanks so much to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.